Welcome to Semiobites, bite-sized podblog episodes related to theological semiotics.
Terry, it's been a few days since we talked last. How are you doing so far?
Doing better. I don't know if I mentioned it last time. I've started swimming again, which is like rediscovering Eden. It's really made a huge difference in my attitude and the way I feel about myself and my day.
That's great news.
So that's the big news.
That's great news. Congrats on that. It's always good to be healthy, especially in our current environment. Yeah. So over the course of the summer, we took off because we're on a season-based system of semiobites, and we're now here for season three. But over the course of the summer, as in like a week or two ago, we received a voicemail on our podcast from Joe Forte. And so I'll go ahead and play that audio in just a few seconds. But essentially is that he's put together a change.org petition. He wants to change the Arizona Sun Devils to the Sun Angels.
Hey guys, this is Joe Forte. I just started a petition to change the name of the Arizona State University Sun Devils athletic team to Sun Angels. It's on change.org. We have over 1,500 signatures as of right now, and I think it would make a great story. I'd love to talk about it. Thanks so much, guys. Talk soon. Bye.
This is a bigger conversation than just Sun Devils versus Sun Angels. I mean, this is semiobites. We have to look at the signs and discern what's going on here. And it got me thinking, well, this isn't just that, but it's what's been happening the past couple years, especially the past few months, is this concept of the cancel culture. And it seems that in our current contemporary culture, which is very repetitive, I know, but in our current culture, the culture, if it's something, if there's an object or a mindset or a physical representation that does not jive with the view of peace, love, and harmony for everybody and inclusiveness for all, then it needs to be excluded and canceled out, which to me seems contrary to the concept of inclusive behavior, because you would include those that exclude, but you're excluding what you feel is exclusive, which doesn't make sense to me. It seems hypocritical, but that's the basic premise of the cancel culture is this doesn't fit, let's get rid of it. For example, a lot of sports teams are changing names, which is where this conversation of Sun Devils to Sun Angels came into. Let's cancel Sun Devils. It sounds inappropriate, and let's go with Sun Angels. Or let's cancel a sports team whose moniker could be the Indians or something like that. And then that's because it's not really that, ooh, I'm being too sensitive here. And I'm, you know, I don't like it. It's triggering me. This isn't very safe space enough for me. So let's go ahead and change this so I can feel better about it. That's my perspective. What's yours?
I'm sitting here giggling, listening to you describe it, because I've been on the stump this week already half a dozen times about, if you want to have a conversation in a safe space, do not invite me.
Yeah.
I am temperamental. You know this from our time together at the seminary with Lynn on our calls and in the advances. I am temperamentally allergic to safe spaces. I won't aggressively, intentionally blow them up. But as soon as the passive aggression, which is better understood as aggressive passivity, as soon as that aggressive passivity emerges in any gathering and tries to seize the dialogue and the narrative unspoken, it's a passive aggression, but the safe space mentality is taking over the narrative. And it cancels the openness of the narrative. It violates the First Amendment. I mean, there's so many things wrong with that idea of a First Amendment, of a freedom of speech or a safe space with respect to the First Amendment and other things, that I'm just on principle, on logic, on law, and on emotion, I'm opposed to them. I mean, if you're an adult and you want to be in a safe space, go back to kindergarten. That's the real world. And cancel culture is just the How would I describe it? I'd say cancel culture is just the viral version of safe space.
Yeah. So I don't know. To me, it really bothers me, the concept of safe spaces. I'm not saying people can't feel safe in the conversation and have a healthy dialogue. I believe that should exist. But to me, a healthy dialogue means opening yourself up to other perspectives. Perhaps how you view it is not the only way to view it. Perhaps you need to be open and allow things to influence you and allow your perspectives to change. I'm saying we, in regards to the safe space, I'm being able to feel safe. I get that. In regards to the safe space of you're not allowed to offend me, that's absolutely absurd, because how can we grow as adults if we're not faced with opposition? That's the very premise of human nature in so many different perspectives. Whether one's religious or not. I mean, for me, in Orthodox Judaism, we say every blade of grass that's out there that's growing, what you don't see is an angel beating it down with words, telling it that it needs to be stronger. And the same thing applies to us. We have to grow, and in order to grow, we have to face extreme opposition to be able to solidify ourselves and temper ourselves. We know that with steel, the best type of sword is a tempered steel sword, not one that hasn't been tempered. If it's only experienced hot or only experienced cold, it's not going to survive the battle that's to come. Yeah. And being an adult, regardless of what country you're in, that's a battle. You're constantly faced with opposition and differing perspectives and struggles you have to endure. And if we can't temper ourselves to be able to not break down emotionally like a sobbing baby over every little thing, that's problematic.
I totally agree with you. I think we're certainly on the same page here. And I think semiotics certainly backs us up. The signs of this are everywhere, and they're getting brighter, louder, harder. You know, I mean, it's just, it's pervasive. It's becoming pervasive. So I ask myself the question, is this like a self-contained phenomenon? Is it just something that kind of sprang out of nowhere? Or is there a deeper issue here? Let's think in terms of your PARDIS, okay? And what does that stand for again? The four layers of thought or exegesis in Judaism?
Yes. So we've got pshat, which is the basic, remez, which is getting a little deeper into the metaphor. That's where some folks believe semiotic lens applies. Drash, which is engaging it and applying it to their other areas. And then where Orthodox Judaism is concerned, the last layer, so the hidden secrets. Unless you're a true Kabbalistic master or a pure soul of the Lamed Vav or something like that, we don't really touch that area that often. Right. But those are the four layers. And so, but here's the thing, exegesis is more than four layers, because you have seven levels to your soul. And so there's different perspectives. So for every layer you engage in, if you engage with each level of your soul, now we're talking about 28 possibilities. Or if you're talking about the 6 million souls at Mount Sinai when the Torah was given, then you're talking about a lot more. I mean, we also say there's 72 names of God. So how far do you want to get? We can split it into billions of possible interpretations and possible ways to view the text at any given moment.
Okay. All I really wanted to invoke it for was to say, if we look at this cancel culture phenomenon and we look at safe space and look at them as being kind of variations of the same disease, one's a cold and the other's the flu, however you want to milk that metaphor. If we drill deeper into that, here's just kind of, I'm just kind of brainstorming this. It just occurred to me a minute, as you were talking a minute ago. It occurs to me that the safe space is an emotional cry for help. Okay. It's dressed up when you encounter people who insist on or demand or won't engage with you unless they feel emotionally safe there. When you encounter people like that, it's kind of like an armor or like a costume, and passive aggression and political correctness are the shield and the sword that they carry when they're in that space, right? And same thing for the cancel culture. It's a little more outspoken, it's a little more intense, it's a little more confrontational, but it's still an emotional outcry. Protecting the emotional investment in their beliefs is what's going on in both cases. So I ask myself, What could that be? What could be going on en masse collectively within the human race at this point in time, such that we have that emotional desperation? And the word is obvious. The answer becomes obvious when I think about it that way. It's solastalgia. We are all fully infused with the physical knowledge that our world is collapsing around us. We don't want to think about it. We don't want to feel it. We don't want to be aware of it. But you look at things from the point of view of the climate crisis we're in and just ask the question, what does the concept of safe space even fucking mean? Pardon my colloquialism there. But what does it even mean in the truth and reality of climate collapse and social collapse? It's a meaningless idea. Well, if that's what's going on and you're not aware of it and won't think about it, won't face it, won't confront it as that deep and emotional rage and grief, what are you going to do? You're going to transfer it. You're going to project it. You're going to move it into other realms of your life and look for emotional escape from that truth and reality into a place where you don't have to face that one and you don't have to have any of your other feelings, your other beliefs challenged such that they would hurt your feelings. Now, I'm not just kind of, I'm spitballing here, but it seems to me that there's a fundamental psychic and spiritual connection going on there. So the safe space and the cancel culture for me, I'm just kind of asking the question, might they not be symptoms of what the marrow in our bones is trying to tell us, which is, I don't care how you feel about it, Mother Nature's coming back to get even. you see what I mean?
Well, even that, I think, is a symptom. If we want to twist the board there, the climate issues we're having is a symptom. It's not the root cause. It's a symptom of part of the toxicity that's within the human narrative that we currently are expressing. I mean, from a Jewish perspective, we're in Gaulis right now. We're in exile. The temple's destroyed. The sacrifices have been canceled, more or less. And we're in exile. And we're still trying to get back to that point. But with every passing generation, we fall farther and farther away from the level of wisdom and spiritual purity that we had during the time of the temple. And even going back for that, from during the time of Abraham and his son, or from during the time of the Garden of Eden. Yep. It's this constant rebound. I mean, in our last episode, I brought up the concept of jumping from one ditch to another on a highway. Yep. And it seems kind of like that as well. I mean, we're at the point where we've become almost too far gone on one end. We're going to have to bounce back. So what's interesting is on the Jewish calendar, we just finished our fall high holidays, right? Everybody's pretty familiar with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Well, a little less known is Sukkos and Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah and Hoshana Rabbah. And so this is the, what's fascinating about this is the festival Sukkos. You and I have talked before. We once recorded an episode where I was in my sukkah. The festival of booths, or the feast of tabernacles, as some Christians would phrase it, right? It's this reminder of this time in the desert, but it's also a recognition of what's to come, is that when a temple is restored during these festival days, all the nations come forward with an offering to Hashem. They come to Jerusalem, they come to the temple, and they present their offerings on behalf of their nation. And at the very end, we have, so for 7 days it's happened, at the very end we have this eighth day called Shemini Atzeres. And in Israel, it's the same day as Simchas Torah. In diaspora, it's not because of calendar differences, but Shemini Atzeres more or less is eighth day, or the eighth time. And that's this special time where all the nations have come before Hashem. It's like this huge party where everybody, all your friends, and everybody's at this party, and it's booming for 7 days. And at the end of it, like, okay, everybody except my inner circle, go home. We just need some one-on-one time just to chill and rest and just to be together as intimate family. And so that's what that concept of that holiday is. But we look at that in the future lens too, that this is where it's going to be, right? So for a whole week, all these nations come on that last day. The Jewish people just get their one-on-one time with Hashem. And currently, during that time frame, what we read is the book of Kohelis, which is Ecclesiastes, which honestly, if there is ever a book to be canceled in this current culture, my rabbi pointed out, this would be it. Should we cancel Ecclesiastes? Because a lot of what it says does not jive with our sensitive nature for today.
Oh man, that just, I resonate with that just physically. I'm vibrating in resonance with that because Ecclesiastes is my favorite book in the Bible, or at least my favorite one from the Old Testament. It is the philosophical book.
I mean, it is.
And I just love it. Yeah, that's so cool.
So there's a verse there. I mean, we're all familiar with this, right? There's nothing new under the sun,
right?
Now, in Judaism, this means that literally there are no new creations since the creation period of that first week. So when we come across something new today, no, it's already existed. We're just experiencing a rebirth of it, or it's now been released into the world. And if we consider this concept that there's nothing new, the cancel culture is not new, and safe spaces isn't new. So where is it coming from? And as some like to put it, history repeats itself. The cancel culture is usually a symptom of a horrible future. The cancel culture, for example, before it hit America, it hit Poland. And what happened there is they erased all the knowledge that the Polish government intentionally and the neighbors intentionally helped the Nazis enable the Holocaust in Poland. If you go into Poland and say that, you're locked up in jail. It's a crime. That's what they've done. They've tried to erase that. They tried to revise it, revisionist history. The concept that today, somebody talks about the Holocaust, the question isn't, well, how bad was the Holocaust? The question was, did the Holocaust really happen? That is part of the cancel culture because it doesn't jive with today. But the cancel culture took place in a fascist socialist nation in the 1930s, in which enabled the socialist nationalist regime, which we now call the Nazi regime, to exist because they canceled anything that did not work with their narrative. Right. And that's what has me concerned is, yeah, topple some statues, but I don't believe these statues should be destroyed or we should erase that they even existed in history. We have to acknowledge the dirty history of America, because if we don't, then all we're doing is saying, let's make America great again, because it was always great. You and I both know that's an absolute falsehood.
It's fascinating, speaking of that, and that's just an aside. I didn't know, I hadn't paid attention to think about whether Make America Great Again had a history. Well, there's video of Ronald Reagan using the exact phrase several times. The first film with audio recording was done by Mussolini. And in it, he talks about how he is all about making America great. I'm going, wow, what about the resonance harmony of history at work in the semiotics of those events?
I mean, tribalism, while one, it can give an identity, but at the same time, it's a very slippery slope that leads one to isolate others and cause wars and factions and divisions. And toxic tribalism is what we're experiencing now. I mean, that's why our government can't even function during a pandemic. It's because everyone's picking sides instead of trying to care for others. So when I'm looking at this is the cancel culture, I think, is intrinsically problematic and should not exist. We can't just cancel things because it doesn't work with our narrative. We can't just erase history because we've decided to be too sensitive and be a crybaby about it. We have to acknowledge the tough stuff and the wrongs that have happened and the tragedies that have occurred throughout history so that we can make sure that they don't happen again. And we can make sure that we can have a better tomorrow instead of a repetition of history. So while I understand that people want to have a place where they feel safe to talk about things, to enable it to the point where we can't present opposition, I think is dangerous and deadly. And to bring up, let's cancel everything because it doesn't work for us anymore, is completely inappropriate. Yeah, you want to change a sports team name because it's offensive? By all means, go for it. That's fine with me. You want to remove the statue from the park because you found out that person was a racist slave owner? Okay, remove it. Put things in a museum that's available, that's not in some dungeon, that's easily available so people can see the history instead of the whitewashing of history, right, more or less, mm-hmm, so that we can see everything that's happened that's been wrong. Yeah, you don't want to see the racist statue in the park. I get it. It belongs in a museum. I agree with that. I don't agree with destroying it because you think that statue should never have existed in the first place. Right. To me, you're erasing something. And when you erase the past, you're able to change things to a very dangerous degree in which we become a murderous people instead of somebody that's trying to reach out a hand and help others.
Right. You're preaching to the choir here, bro. I totally agree. I had a conversation that contractor that came by that delayed our call happens to be a Christian pastor. And on the side, he does contracting. Yeah. Now, I would guess that he's fairly much a small mainstream Christian, what Lynn Sweet would call the attractional, propositional, colonialist Christianity, right? Uh-huh. I have a feeling that that's the position he and his church have on the spectrum. But nevertheless, I had an interesting conversation with him. And I shared with him a nightmare. I don't know if we talked about this in our last episode. Did we talk about
the nightmare? Yeah, we talked about the nightmare.
That I had wide awake, right?
Well, you mentioned there was a nightmare. You did not explain for our audience what the nightmare was. I got that behind the scenes.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I'll share it with the audience here. We got 15 minutes left as I see it. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
All right. It'll take me a couple of minutes, so bear with me. I was literally sitting here at the computer working, and I was thinking about the vote and the election and, you know, the nomination of the Supreme Court justice, blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't really focusing on those thoughts. They were just kind of floating around in my gray matter shadow space, kind of subliminally there. And suddenly it dawned on me that there are historical precedents, specifically Nixon in 72 and Johnson prior to that, when he didn't run for a second term, but Nixon, when he resigned and Ford took over the office and then subsequently got reelected himself. Those historical precedents struck a spark in my imagination wherein I envisioned Trump pulling a rabbit out of the hat, but it's more like pulling a viper out of a sock, where Trump just kind of in the 11th hour, like maybe in a couple of days, maybe anytime between now and the 3rd, which is election day, just says, you know what, I'm done, I resign, Pence is now the acting president. Well, what would the ramifications of that be? Well, first, the mail-in and absentee ballots would be totally nullified because Pence's name isn't on them, except as the VP. If he's the sitting president, and Trump's not even running for the position, those ballots, at least that option on those ballots, is nullified completely. So where would it go? It would go to the Supreme Court. Well, what's going on with the Supreme Court in the news that got finalized last night? An extremely right conflation of civil and faith religion, Christianity. The nationalism of the American mythology conflated with the Christianity of the alt-right, ultra-conservative Christianity, be it conflated, and you get that judge and you get Pence. So what we would find ourselves facing, if that, I don't even want to put a likelihood on it, I'm sure it's very small, but it's nonetheless non-zero probability. If that kind of scenario were to unfold, where would we be? We would be we're already living in a police state. We need to wake up and face that truth and reality. And with Trump calling out his own brown shirt Gestapo with the Proud Boys and so on, there we have it. You know, it's blatant. It's in our face. Those are the signs that are screaming at us that most of us won't face up to. But we would find ourselves in a fascist theocracy in that scenario.
Yeah.
And I know that has to chill your bones, and it certainly chills mine. Talk about cancel culture. Imagine an alt-right Christian theocracy running the United States of America, able to rewrite history at its own whim.
It's disturbing at the very least.
That's a disturbing scenario, isn't it? It's been haunting me ever since it came up in my thinking, but I shared it with that pastor who's the contractor guy that came by. And I, much as I think he's mainstream, he was nodding his head, and the only thing we really openly agreed on was, and this is New Testament stuff, Matthew, the Olivet Discourse, we just don't know. You know, Jesus doesn't know, and the Father ain't telling him, and he ain't telling us. That's, you know, the Olivet Discourse kind of paraphrased. But so we didn't talk about end times, but geez, the things that are happening.
Yeah.
That's not even, I mean, we could go down the rabbit trail of cancel culture in the scientific domain. Whew.
I think it's everywhere. I mean, that's hugely problematic.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, they have the benefit of knowing who the president's going to be at this point, hopefully. If our listeners don't know by now who the president is, with this airing after the election, we've got some serious problems coming ahead. But if they do know who the president's going to be, I guess great news for them. So hopefully that's not the nightmare scenario presented. But coming back to this concept of the cancel culture and safe spaces, and even the concept of sun devils versus sun angels. I mean, yeah, I think do a petition, sign it if you want. Mm-hmm. Change the sun devils to the sun angels. Or maybe consider choosing, if you really want to be sensitive for somebody, maybe don't choose sun angels, because what if the atheist doesn't like the term angel? That might offend them and ruffle feathers. I mean, there's an infinite level of absurdity we can get to this point.
Yeah, you're reading my mind, brother.
It's not like the sports name is FU. Okay? So I don't, Since it's not overtly offensive to everybody, maybe we just leave that one be. Now, if there's a people group that says, well, wait a second, I don't like that you call these guys the jippers because that offends gypsies. Okay, I understand, especially if the team plays dirty, right? But sun devils versus sun angels, I'm not too concerned about that one. So nice. So for Joe, I wish you the best in your petition. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, that's okay, because we don't have to change everything according to the world to the way we want to see it. That's the beauty about one of the concepts of America. And that's something that Orthodox Judaism views as well, is that Hashem gave us free will to a certain degree, and that we can have our own opinion. We may not always be able to express it, and we can't always make everybody follow our opinion. But we're allowed to have an independent thought. And what scares me is the concept of safe spaces and cancel culture getting to the point where independent thought could be illegal and you could have thought police. And I'm pretty sure that's been touched on before in history.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Hello, George Orwell. Thank you very much. Thought crime.
Yes. So, I mean, in the end, I think we need to find a healthy balance. We need to get out of a ditch of toxicness, but it doesn't mean we should throw ourselves into another ditch of uber sensitivity.
Right.
That seems absurd. And I wish that the human condition, I wish humans as a whole would stop jumping to extremes and just learn to try to have balance for once in their lives. I don't understand why our nature is to go from one extreme to another. It seems incredibly stupid to me, yet I see everybody do this all the time over everything. So I know it's not a once and done scenario. It's got to be a core part of the human condition for everybody to keep doing the same thing.
Yeah, it is. It is. It very much is. And I would say, what was the fellow's name who left the message? Joe?
Joe Forte, yeah.
Yeah, I would echo what you've said to Joe. I would just say, Joe, go into this with your eyes wide open and your mind wide open, and recognize that your exercises, what you're exercising here, is an act of cancel culture. And it can bite you from either side. You change, just like Yoni was saying, if you change it to angels, you're going to have atheists, agnostics, and apotheists, and humanists, and naturalists, and materialists coming after you with pitchforks. So, you know, just kind of be aware that it's a cancel culture can of worms that you're opening with the whole thing. But if you want to pursue it, Yoni's right. A good petition is the way to go. And there's lots of online services that will do petitions for you.
Yeah, so that's the thing. We have the ability to express ourselves, and I think we should. And if we express ourselves by saying, I'm not comfortable with this, can we do something about it? Totally fine. I'm just hesitant when we express ourselves to the sit to a point where we say, I can't hear any other perspectives, so you can't share that because I might be offended. To me, that's where you're taking your rights over somebody else's rights and infringing on the freedoms that you want to have as well. And who says that you're greater than they are? Who says your life's more valuable than they are?
Oh, it's such a logical fallacy at its core. I mean, it's an appeal to emotion. And it begs the question of freedom of speech. And it's an appeal to pity. I mean, it's just logically off, out, you know, it's running in the wrong direction on a bad track in horrible shoes.
Yeah. Now, it's kind of funny and timely for this, for our recording, is there's this movie that Amazon just came out with, which I haven't seen. And let's be honest, I'm not going to watch it because it does not align with my sensitivities. And so I don't want to expose myself to it. But the very, very, very basic premise and the intention behind the film, I think, is a very good one, which is Borat 2.
Oh, I've seen promo for that. I haven't watched the trailer yet. I didn't see Borat 1, so...
We'll see. So Borat 1, I didn't see that one either. But the premise behind the first Borat is Sacha Baron Cohen. He's a Jew, right? He plays a non-Jew, and he comes to America to make documentary to make his country great and make documentary about Americans. And the thing that's funny is in the entire movie, from what I understand, I'm fair to be corrected here because I haven't watched it. I've only read what it's about and what the intention was. But the movie was to show Americans how absurd Europeans view them to be. And so he played off of every stereotype, and he played off everything, defend everybody, and makes everybody look like idiots in the movie. And then the second one, he actually was able to insert himself within Trump election process and get interactions with Trump's family and his fixer and put them in compromising situations that make them look like fools, to the point of saying, look at how stupid all this is, and this is what you want, America, really. But the point is that he plays off of so many things, and he being a Jew, the funny concept is he intentionally is very anti-Semitic in a lot of things he does in the show, both movies. And just to point out, you know, part of the problem America has. And it's not to say, oh, we need to cancel more things. I think he's trying to point out the absurdity of the concept behind cancel culture. For example, there's currently a war in France over Macron versus the Muslims, more or less, to narrow it down to a very small concept of he's making, there was a teacher that was killed by radical Muslims, extremists, because that teacher made fun of their prophet. So the teacher was beheaded. And the response of France has been, oh, Muslim is evil. Islam is evil, 100%. This is not okay. But this guy, this leader, Macron, he's, over the past months, he's been making a lot of work to try to make it impossible to be an observant Muslim in France, to the point where a woman can't wear a hijab on a beach because that's an unacceptable behavior. And to me, that's the scary part of going to the other end, is just as we want to protect those around us, and just as we want to protect Christians or protect Jews or protect Hindus, we need to protect Muslims as well and atheists as well. It needs to be understanding that everybody has value. And while my worldview doesn't agree with their worldview, I make sure my expression of my worldview isn't trying to destroy their life. And so I could be offended by them, but it doesn't mean that I can change things and cancel their lives because I don't like it.
Right.
And that's part of where I think the cancel culture can be dangerous, especially if it takes more root in government, is we could, America could start doing what France is doing. And well, who's next? Okay, after they're done with the Muslims, who else are they going to target? They're going to target everybody else. It's a dangerous path to walk down.
We're on the same page here, Yoni, as thankfully is more often the case than not. I would just end my thinking on the cancel culture with, I guess what grieves me the most is that what falls through the cracks between those ditches, the crack in the pavement between those ditches that you talk about, what falls through the cracks are what Lynn Sweet and others have called the commons, the public square, the public forum, and civility in that forum. Because the fallacy and farce of the safe space cancel culture mentality is uncivil. It's uncivil to the core. And the extremes are also uncivil. Going to one ditch or the other, you end up dropping civility in the middle of the road that you left. So the commons and the civility of human relationships are human being in presence in terms of commons and human civility in terms of relationships. To me, those are the great prices we pay. And that's even before it becomes, you know, butchery and slaughter for profit.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, concluding for me is we need to grow. We need to become better. I can use a controversial term here. We do need to evolve as a people. And we, part of that evolution is fixing things in our culture, fixing things in our nation, fixing things in our world to make amends or to be better. And in some cases, be a little less offensive. But it doesn't mean we have the right to cancel and censor. And so, yeah, change how things are done. Relocate the statues. That's totally a good thing to do because you're being sensitive to other people. But you can't erase the past. You certainly can't hide the past. You can't prohibit the past from coming up in everyday conversation. You can't prohibit people from offending others. That's when we get into dangerous territory that violates the very core of the concept of a Bill of Rights.
Amen. Well, we're straight up noon, so I think this was our hard stop. Thanks again. It's a great conversation. Thanks, Joe,
for the
question. That was a good starting point for this discussion, so we're grateful for that call. We hope others will call in and ask you your own questions. We'll be happy to take them up and integrate them into our conversations here.
Definitely. Thank you. Until next time.
Same here.
Send questions, comments, and suggestions to semiobytes@gmail.com. Semiobytes is a podcast co-hosted by Yedbrick and Semio City that answers Semitic questions via Semiach analysis by addressing misunderstandings to build a bridge of shalom between Judaism and Christianity. Semiobytes is a component of the Track 2 dissertation process at Portland Seminary for Jonathan Esterman and Terry Rankin.